You're tuned into Madiba's Radio, broadcasting live from Nelson Mandela University.
I have fought against white domination, and I have fought against death domination. I have carried the idea of a democratic and free society, in which all persons live together in harmony and with equal opportunity. It is an idea which I hope to live for and to achieve. But if needs be, it is an idea for which I am prepared to die.
Nelson Mandela University. Change the world. Madiba's Radio, changing the world one voice at a time.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the first ever episode of Science Package for 2026. It's an amazing day, it's an amazing day. Of course, you tuned in to Madiba's Radio podcast. And to introduce myself, my name is Tokotelo Ndlovu. I like to call myself the brightest star on the airwaves. Whether you find me on radio, on a podcast, whichever platform, you'll know that once Tsigo is in a space, it will never be the same. And of course, on this episode of Science Package, we're talking interesting things. As always, it's a new year, so we're trying to just start off light, but also get into the tea, get into all the information, what has been happening in 2026 so far. And just to give you a little rundown as to what we'll be discussing, firstly, we'll be discussing the electricity hike in Nelson Mandela Bay municipality, because listen, electricity is getting more expensive in the Bay. And then afterwards, we will be discussing tourism plans for the municipality according to the Democratic Alliance. Just a little heads up, it may turn a bit political, but we're going to keep it objective. Just to give a trigger warning, we are not saying that we are supporting what they're saying, we're just hearing them out. And what do they think about tourism in terms of our lovely, lovely city? And because it is Valentine's month, you know, people are getting romantic. Even if you're not, that's okay too. But just to highlight that it's Valentine's month, we'll be discussing love and psychosis. Why does love drive us crazy? Because one thing about love, it will get you to do things that you'll never think you would ever do, both in good ways and in bad ways. But of course, let's get straight into it. So, the electricity hike announcement at Bay. Now, although Eskom is still yet to announce its tariff prices for the 2026 cycle, Nelson Mandela Bay municipality is planning to raise electricity prices by 9% for the financial year of 2026 to 2027. Which 9% is a lot. Like, if it was like 0.5, 1 or 2, you'd be like, okay, I understand. But 9% is actually crazy. Now, the city has met with community groups, business chambers, and other stakeholders to discuss this plan. Now, residents and businesses can submit objections or comments until February 24th. So you still have time. Whether you agree with this, you think it should be higher, we should be paying 50% more, or you're just like, hell no, like, we cannot be doing 9%. It's too much. Now, you might be wondering, why 9%? Now, the 9% number was chosen based on an average of recently approved increases, but some councillors questioned whether that was the right method, especially because last year the hike was around 12.8%. So when you compare it to last year, it's not too bad, but it's still a lot. Like, why does it keep on increasing? Like, I know to an extent it has to increase because, you know, inflation and life, which sucks, but I guess it is what it is. But like, these high numbers, especially in a municipality like NMB, I don't know if it's sustainable, especially when you consider what has been going on throughout these months, especially if you live in areas such as Summer Strand, Humewood. You know that those areas barely have electricity half the time. And I think a lot of residents were actually complaining about this, is that there was also a huge concern about big electricity losses, reportedly around 840 million due to theft and infrastructure problems, which raises the question, why is electricity getting more expensive when we barely have electricity? Like, make it make sense. Like, it doesn't make sense. And I understand why the community is just like, come on now, because at the end of the day, we can't be paying for something that is inconsistent. Because if it's inconsistent, then what's the point? Might as well install solar panels and just call it a day. Even though with solar panels, that's not really, well, it's a good solution, it's environmentally friendly, but at the same time, it's also another cost. And you know, like, what I genuinely hope for this is that us as residents of Nelson Mandela University, not university only, but the municipality, we can get together, we can really have these conversations and really look deeper into finding out, like, why is the price increasing? And outside of the price increasing, also getting down to the fact that, like, what is up with all these outages? Like, it's too much. It is too much. I mean, these days it's been cool. Ever since I've been back in PE, I haven't had an outage. And I'm praying that there is not going to be an outage, because if there is, then I'm literally going to crash out. But, you know, what can we do about that? What can we do about that? Hopefully they got their infrastructure on lock. And in that scenario, maybe the 9% would be fair. But as we move right along, let us talk about the Democratic Alliance's tourist plan for Nelson Mandela University. Now, as I said in the beginning, disclaimer warning, it's about to get a bit political. And just because we're speaking about this doesn't mean we really support their views. I mean, if you do or if you don't, that's your own prerogative. But we're speaking from an objective standpoint. Just to hear them out, what they got to say. Do we agree? Do we disagree? What's going on? Now, Nelson Mandela Bay has a strong tourist potential, thanks to its natural attractions, culture, and hospitality. Overall, it's the Windy City. It's a beautiful city. It's the friendly city. Like, Port Elizabeth or Qabeqa is really a city where great things can happen, in my opinion. Now, in this piece, they state that tourism's economic contribution in the city fell significantly between 2024 and 2025. And of course, the effect of this has been negative, like job loss and weakened investment confidence. And I feel like sometimes in life, we tend to kind of not really address how much tourism can really play into a city's economy. Because when it comes to Airbnbs, tourist attractions, restaurants, nature reserves, all those things are funded by tourists. So if people are not coming to the city and acting as tourists, then so many industries won't get profit, and not even just profit in a more capitalistic sense, but profit to survive, because okay, we live in a capitalist system and we need money to survive, unfortunately. Now, it identifies issues such as crime and infrastructure as factors that are believed to discourage visitors, which to an extent I agree, but at the same time I disagree. But I feel like my disagreement may not be hypothetically, like, factually sound, because I do agree that more so in the danger aspect, Nelson Mandela Bay has gotten very dangerous. Like, if you know, you know, there's been so much going on in the danger aspect, and it's really alarming. I mean, just the other day I saw how in Richmond Hill this guy got his phone stolen. We all know how notorious Summer Strand can be these days, where you can't even walk in peace because there's house robberies, pickpocketing, students are targeted, houses are targeted, cars are targeted, everybody's targeted. So I do get in that sense that, like, it is getting more dangerous. And as a tourist, I don't want to go to a city or a place where now I always have to be on guard. It's not fun. It's really not fun. But at the same time, I do feel like it shouldn't really stop tourism in a sense, because there are so many other cities in the world that are also, like, highly dangerous. Even in South Africa, like, we can all agree that, yes, Port Elizabeth is dangerous, but, I mean, if you compare it to the bigger cities, But, of course, let's not get into that. But if you understand what I'm trying to say, it's like, I don't think theft is the number one reason. I mean, it's a major reason, and I'm not saying that, you know, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter, because it does matter, because it's our livelihoods. But also, I do also feel like, from a personal perspective, I do feel that Qabeqa just has a lot of lack of marketing, if I may say, because it is a beautiful city. But when you ask the average person, especially being from Joburg, a lot of people don't really know much about Qabeqa. They're like, oh, Port Elizabeth. They just know there's shipping. It's a seaside coastal town. It's chilled. that's it. Like, there's nothing much going on when there's so much to do in this municipality, not even within the city, but out of the city. Addo Elephant Park, Titicama, which is like an hour away. You know, like, there's so many things you could do. Even go to Sardinia Bay and just, you know, do the dunes there. Like, there's so much to do on so many different levels. And I do feel like the city has so much potential. Because in my, I've always said this, in my unpopular opinion, Gqeberha has the potential to overtake Durban. And I'm not throwing shade to Durban. We love Durban. But I feel like it could either overtake it or kind of match its level in terms of tourism and just being an overall vibe. But I do feel like it just needs better marketing. It really needs to put itself out there and really be like, hey, local visitors, hey, international visitors, please come to our city. And of course, when we talk on the international front, then of course, other conversation needs to be had. Can we even accommodate international visitors? Because at the end of the day, Chief Davis Stearman International Airport is categorized as an international airport, but number one, the runway is too small to really cater for those huge air jets such as the A380, if you know what I mean. And also the facilities in the airport, there's not enough baggage carousels. You know, the whole airport, if it wants to reach international standards, would need a whole upgrade or just to build a new one somewhere. I don't know where, maybe there by like Koga, I think that could be a good spot, but I'm not too sure. But anyways, back into the team. Now, the Democratic Alliance has proposed a plan as to what can be done to stimulate tourism. Now, let's see, in their opinion, what do they think can be done? Number one, create a dedicated tourism action plan and strengthen the municipal department responsible for it. Number two, improve infrastructure at key tourist spots like beaches. Okay, we know PE has very beautiful beaches, and I do feel like honing in on the beaches will really help the city. So I agree with that. Number three, install around 200 high-tech cameras in areas with high crime or tourism activities to enhance safety monitoring. I love that. Number four, build partnerships with tourism stakeholders and businesses. Number five, support small businesses in townships as part of the growing of the local economy. This part I actually really like because I do feel like, you know, unlike a certain other South African city, no shade, but the real ones will know which city I'm talking about, where it's like they kind of ignore the local economy, especially within the township, where it's just like in the more suburban areas, in the more tourism areas, everything is kind of set in order and everything is kind of just, you know, made to a certain standard. But when you go to the townships, it's like a whole different place. And the disparity between that exists within the city is now like so bad. And you're just like, is this city catered for tourists or is it catered for African citizens? So if you know what city I'm talking about, then you know what I'm trying to say with that. So I love how with the Democratic Alliance, they are kind of integrating this within Port Elizabeth, because at the end of the day, all the economies, township economies, urban economies, whichever economy that exists in the city needs to be integrated in order for it to feel like a fully fledged city where tourists can exist, so African citizens can exist, everybody can exist in peace and in love and really just enjoy the beauty of the city. Now, they also said they wanted to outsource management of municipal resorts to the private sector with the goal of boosting jobs and tourism. Although I will say, why the private sector? But I also get, you know, the private sector does have the facilities to do such things. But I also wish they could include the public sector, because one thing about the public sector, it tends to get a bit neglected sometimes, especially in terms of funding. So I do hope for a much more combined approach where both private and public could really work together and create something beautiful, as well as launch a marketing campaign, as I was saying, to promote the city as a destination once these steps are in place. Now, this is interesting, and I think a lot of these points I do agree with, and I do see the validity in it, although some points I do feel like need a bit more, like, they need to go back into the boardroom and be more discussed, as we said, with the whole private sector thing, as well as the whole not really focusing purely on like the private sector and the suburban side of things, but also having all the economies together. I do feel like certain things need to be revisited, but I see what they're cooking. I'm just curious about the implementation, because we know this. One thing about a lot of the political figures in our country, all talk, they say a lot of things, but the execution is not there. Or the execution comes, but it's a bit murky. So it's just like, DA, could you pull this off? Could you not pull this off? Would you pull this off in a way that's controversial? Let's see. I guess only time will tell, because at the end of the day, we also have to acknowledge that in Nelson Mandela Bay, they don't rule like by a majority. It is also one of those cities that are run by coalition. So they could have this plan, and the other parties that they are working with could be like, yeah, no, girl, it's not happening. We ain't doing this. So I would really like to see how in that context could they work together, and how this could be implemented. So it's quite interesting. It's very interesting to really think about. And of course, as I said, because it is Valentine's month, you know, it's people get romantic, people with their booze, people are happily single, people are just living life and really exploring the month of love, regardless of what love means to you. But I really found this interesting academic article, because, you know, we love research over here. They really talked about love and psychosis and the concept of why does love make us crazy? Because at the end of the day, if you've ever fallen in love or if you've ever seen people in love, you may have seen that, yeah, you know, a lot goes down, good ways and bad ways. So it's really interesting to see why does it just have such an impact on us. Now, of course, the author of this article is the Maria, which is part of the Institute of Applied Psychology as the chair of psychotherapy at the Gregorius Rekia Institute, and of course led by the head professor, Dr. Professor Cheglo Chabala, in 2015. Now, as the article states, love is a very powerful emotional experience. We can say that again. We can definitely say that again. And for some people, especially with people with deep psychological vulnerabilities, that intensity can feel overwhelming enough to disturb their sense of reality. It's not saying that love is crazy and love is kind of a thing that should not be happening and can really lead you into insanity. It's not saying that, but it can be psychologically destabilizing in certain situations. Now, we're questioning, why does love feel so intense? Now, when people fall in love, you constantly think about them. Emotions feel heightened. You may idealize them. You feel deeply connected and attached. Your mood becomes strongly tied to them. If you know, you know. One text or an absence of a text can really make or break your day. It's really not a fun experience, but you know, once you're in love, such things do matter. And I think it's a human experience. We've all gone through it, or if you haven't, you may go through it, you may not go through it, but it's just something that a lot of us have experienced. But psychologically, love also involves strong attachment, emotional dependency, vulnerability, fear of loss or rejection, change in identity, where we is instead of me, which is something that's also very interesting and very interesting to navigate, especially on a personal experience, how to kind of navigate acting as I and then acting as a unit. I think kind of combining those two states of being can be very tricky at times, because for a lot of us, we either really run on like a very sense of me, myself, and I, but then also when you're not in a relationship, you're also going to consider that we, what are we building? What are we working towards? Who are we together? Also without losing ourselves, because that's very important. So where does psychosis come in the equation? Now, if you don't know what psychosis is, psychosis in simple terms involves losing touch with reality, distorted thinking, extreme emotional reactions, difficulty separating inner feelings from external reality. Now, the article argues if somebody already struggles with identity stability, attachment fears, or emotional regulation, romantic love can amplify those struggles. Love becomes a trigger, not the root cause. You can think of it as emotional overload, because it can activate very, very deep feelings. Fear of abandonment, fear of rejection, losing oneself, validation, old childhood attachment wounds. Now, for vulnerable individuals, love could equal emotional stresses, and emotional stresses could cause mental instability, and instability may also contribute to psychotic symptoms. Now, attachment theory is connected to this, because attachment theory says our early relationships shape how we handle closeness. And I know in a more commercialized sense or a more like casual sense, I'm not sure if you've seen, but a lot of people we know when it comes to like dating and stuff, there's like different types of attachments. You have anxious attachments, you have avoidant attachment, you have secure attachment, you have dysregulated attachment. So if you know of that, then I feel like it makes sense in this context. And just for people who may not know, when you're anxiously attached, you desire more so closeness and more reassurance from your partner. When you're avoidant attached, you may kind of cause distance due to fear of rejection or fear of the emotion became coming too much. Dysregulated attachment is kind of the mixture of both. You like sometimes anxious, sometimes avoidant. You kind of flip-flop in between. And secure attachment is kind of the healthy middle ground. Now, when I say healthy, I'm not saying if you have the other attachment style, there's something wrong with you. There isn't, because it is human and we cannot control that. We can be aware of it and try to work through it, but, you know, it is what it is. So when you have secure attachment, you kind of, you don't really need constant reassurance, but at the same time, you're still emotionally and physically present in a way. Of course, this theory also affects how we kind of engage in relationships, and the way we form these attachment styles is really kind of shaped by our earlier relationships, as well as our childhood, our relationship with our parents, the relationships we had with our friends when we were children. Such things that when we have been so young can really shape how you come and really act within love. Because if you had a stable love during early care, love often feels safe. But if you have an unstable or a bit traumatic experience with love and care, love can feel threatening. Because love does involve trust, dependence, emotional exposure, risk of loss, which can reactivate these old wounds. And one thing that I think we can say about love is that love is very triggering. I think once you experience love, and yes, you know, there's the feelings of the deep attachment, it's the beauty of knowing that you found your person and you guys are really experiencing these emotions together and really kind of enjoying the experience. But also, we tend to not talk about the human side of engaging with a person on that level will kind of, in a way, act as a mirror to show what you need to work on, how do you need to work on it, and as well as just exposing your true self, not in a bad way all the time, but it really just adds that different layer of self-introspection that is needed to happen, and you learn a lot. So I do feel like because love gets that deep and it really taps into our psyche so deeply, sometimes it can feel triggering. Now, the question is, when it does feel triggering, is that a good sign? Is that a warning sign? Should you go closer and have healthy communication? Or should you just be like, you know what? This is not going to happen and I'm a dip. It really depends on the scenario and it really depends on different factors and as well as the type of relationship you are in. Now, why does love sometimes feel like you're losing your mind? Because even in healthy people, they may have obsessive thoughts, thinking about them 24/7, idealization, where basically they're the best person in the world. They cannot do no wrong. Delulu is the solution. My man, my woman, my person. You know that type of culture? Emotional highs and lows, because the emotional roller coaster that will take you on is something else. When it's high, it's high. When it's low, it's low. But you know, at the end of the day, that's also just life. And also a feeling of just not feeling like yourself. Like you've changed. And the change can be scary, but it can also be beautiful. So it's a really interesting experience, because through the self-expansion, as it's called, you temporarily blur boundaries between self and partner. And with this blurring boundaries, it's kind of now navigating how do you still kind of maintain your own personal boundaries without also at the same time honing in on your personal boundaries so much that it kind of damages the relationship. But then also, how do you establish boundaries within the relationship where you all both benefit without losing your guys' selves? It's a very complicated thing. And I think such things need a lot of communication, a lot of emotional honesty, a lot of just sitting down or call, whatever the context may be, and really just reflecting, being honest, and just going in it with the mindset of, at the end of the day, we are working together, not against each other. Because I don't know if it's just my feed. I don't know what my feed is trying to tell me. But a lot of my feed, I've been getting so much content about basically how to navigate relationship problems. And a really interesting thing I saw is that when it comes to moments and conflict, I think sometimes as humans, we tend to think it's a thing of you versus them. And sometimes winning kind of matters more than fostering connection, where I have to be right, they have to apologize, and, you know, call it at the end of the day, you know? Which, you know, sometimes if they're wrong, how? Like, we can't be out here compromising. But sometimes when you have that kind of combative mindset, it can really kind of cause damage in the relationship, because at the end of the day, if you are in love and you guys are within union, depending what type of union that is, you should be working together and having conversations and sorting out conflict in a way where it's like, how can we understand each other better, and how can we sort this out that brings us closer and not apart? So I think that was very interesting. Had a lot of self-reflection on that. But, you know, I guess, you know, that's just the algorithm sometimes. Now, if you're somebody who's psychologically fragile, however that means to you, so blood blurring can feel terrifying or disorganizing. So it is very scary, and especially if you've been through a lot. I mean, which is kind of everybody, but anyways, I think sometimes this blurring can feel very scary, and you're just like, oh my words, what is going on? And yeah, it's a lot. Now, at the end of the day, love is psychologically powerful, and these powerful emotions may affect mental stability. So if you present more vulnerabilities, you may experience love very differently. But I would just like to say that at the end of the day, just because you may feel like you're more emotionally vulnerable, that doesn't mean I'm saying don't fall in love and just, you know, be on your own business, be on your own back. I mean, if that's what you want to do, we support that, period, queen. But also, just because you're not a perfect human being, that doesn't make you unlovable, because we're all lovable. And what makes us lovable is our imperfections. Because at the end of the day, Mr. or Mrs. Right, at the end of the day, is not perfect. Nobody is perfect. So in as much as you need to understand that you're not perfect, you need to understand that the person that you love is not perfect. And I think once you adopt that mentality, I think you guys can really grow and create something that's oh so beautiful. So of course, it's been an amazing episode. We've spoken about a lot of things. We went from electricity, then we went to tourism. Now we're talking about love. Now we're getting deep. I'm even like, should this be an informative session? Should I just, you know, give a little therapy, you know, give a little advice, you know, even get off the couch and just be talking about old problems? But of course, that's not the moment for that. But of course, it's been an amazing episode. We've really discussed a lot of things, and I genuinely love to hear what you guys have to say on these certain things. How do you feel about electricity hack? Do you support it? Are you like, nah? How do you feel about the tourism? Do you feel like DA is cooking something, or do you feel like they're speaking nonsense? What is your feel? And also, you know, I love the tea. I love the tea. So, you know, you can always hop me a DM and share me your love stories, your relationship problems, you know, all that tea. I'm always here for it. You know, I feel like I give good advice sometimes. I'm also not perfect too, but I feel like I can give sound advice. Both sound, but both understanding certain situations. Because I do feel like when giving advice, you need to have both. You need to be logical, but also emotional. Sometimes you need to support people's delulu. Other times you need to be real with them. But I feel like I have that perfect balance. You know, not to flex myself, but I feel like I've kind of mastered that. So of course, if you want to engage with Madiba's Radio, you can find us on all social media platforms at Madiba's Radio on X, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook. We are Madiba's Radio Worldwide International, honey. And of course, if you want to engage with me, my social media handle on Instagram is ketelo.tligo, and on Facebook is Tligo K Ndlovu. You know, let's continue a conversation. You know, I love a good conversation, finding out things. But of course, this has been Science Package, the first episode of 2026, and I am signing out.
You're tuned into Madiba's Radio, broadcasting live from Nelson Mandela University.
I have fought against white domination, and I have fought against black domination. I have carried the idea of a democratic and free society, in which all persons give to together in harmony and with equal opportunity. It is an idea which I hope to live for and to achieve. But if need be, it is an idea for which I am prepared to die.
Nelson Mandela University. Change the world. You're tuned into Madiba's Radio, changing the world one voice at a time.